Bottom Line in Business. Voice America Business.
Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjo Gall. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Here's Sunjo Gall.
Good morning and welcome to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Today's topic is homogeneous IT outsourcing delivery. Are we there yet? Our guests for today's show are Kevin Campbell, Simon Telfer-Smith, Mindy Blodgett, and Jim Fortner. Kevin is the Group Chief Executive for Outsourcing at Accenture. Simon is the Vice President of Information Technology at Electa Group. Mindy is an Analyst for Enterprise Research Business Process Outsourcing Strategies at Yankee Group. And Jim is the Director of Global Business Services, Infrastructure Services, and Governance at P&G. Good morning, panel. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
So how is the winter treating you?
So far, so good.
I'm just realizing it's here.
Yeah, it feels like it.
Yeah, people are having rain, and I know we had some good 60-degree temperatures in Chicago, unheard of. So.
Yeah, you shouldn't complain. I'm sitting in Stockholm, where it's very cold and very dark.
All right, guys. This topic of homogeneous IT outsourcing delivery has been quite a pain point, and the reason we brought this up is because we are not there yet to some extent. All these people say that we are not able to see that homogeneity that is expected, and many times we say because we're spread out in so many different countries, so many different cultures. That is why that is happening. Now, when we go to the due diligence side of it, we try to very carefully choose the destinations, and we very carefully try to choose the vendors, but still this is not happening. So what do you think is missing here, Kevin?
Well, some of it might be a natural just maturation of how the process works, and you know the different areas. You know, from my experiences in a lot of different places, you know, there are some locations that you're going to pick that are going to be ready immediately or soon to provide the global service. There's other ones that aren't going to be ready for 2 or 3 years. And part of our problem is we all are impatient, right? So we pick a 2 or 3 year one because it's got the best long-term demographics, but then we expect it to have all the skills, all the experience, and all the practice that we need. So I think the biggest thing we got to do is invest more and understand as an industry, we've got to invest more in some of these locations and bring in the skills up to a common level.
Simon?
Yeah, I mean, I think from the customer perspective, I'm looking for the vendors to address, you know, this particular problem. It's something that's too big for me and a relatively small industrial company to attack. So we're relying on the vendors, and one of the drivers for us to get involved in vendor agreements, you know, from my point of view, do I care hugely about where the service is being delivered from? Well, I do, to a degree. I'm much more interested in the processes that are involved within the vendor, how mature they are and how stable they are, so that what we get out from vendors such as Accenture, Unisys, that I've been working with recently, is something that's consistent and predictable and something that I couldn't really achieve internally.
Mindy?
Well, I would say that it's a very hard balance to strike between the labor arbitrage, the cost efficiencies, the quality of the work, the skills needed for the workforce in these various locations, and it's definitely a challenge for the service providers. But I'd like to echo a little bit of what Simon was saying. I think that the customers are becoming much more demanding and much better informed about their needs and what they're going to need from the service providers, and it's up to the service providers to sort of step up to the plate, I think, at this point and start delivering on some of the promises they make when they sign these contracts.
Hmm. Jim?
Yeah, Mindy, that's absolutely right on. At Procter & Gamble, we're in our fifth year now of outsourcing, and you know, we have. To a large part, what Simon said is we're relying on our vendor to really drive low cost computing and support wherever they, you know, whatever is strategic to them. Now we work with them to make the transformation smooth, but really That's their responsibility, and they must deliver that. Our focus is really on the output measures. So we want strong SLAs. We want a reduction in our cost. And we also want strong people to be working with on a on the innovation ideas and those kind of things.
Now, there was a word used by Kevin, impatience. Why do you think a customer side is impatient to make this happen? This was never supposed to be happening overnight in terms of maturity, the quality of delivery.
Well, I'll speak maybe from a customer side. I don't know if it's impatience, when we sign this deal, we have a glide path, a very finite glide path on where we're going to be in terms of the transformation. And, we're ruthless on that glide path. We work very collaboratively with our partner, and we ensure that we're hitting on all cylinders. So, we work together to deliver the promise. In some cases, we might have to make a compromise here and there because when the vendors sign the deals, it's I think it's somewhat unrealistic to think they're going to be able to deliver on everything, but certainly the big things, we have to hold them accountable to. So I'm not sure if it's impatience, but frankly, the shareholders are expecting us to deliver what we committed to, and that's almost a given.
I think in some ways there's more realism on both sides of the equation these days. In the early days of outsourcing, there was some overpromising done on the part of service providers and too high expectations on the part of customers. And I think we're at an interesting inflection point where the customers are more realistic and the service providers are more honest. And in fact, a lot of service providers are stepping away from deals that they know they can't deliver on. Whereas in the old days, they would, say, sure, we can do that, and then fail. So in that way, I think things are better, but there are still problems with delivery and quality, and this is what we were saying earlier about the need for service providers to step it up a bit.
Kevin, do you have a point here?
It goes back to one of my own long-standing arguments that I've made with people, and we sampled our top 100 outsourcing engagements and did some significant medical testing, and absolutely determined that we correlated signing an outsourcing contract with amnesia. and it's never so good as the day you outsourced it to somebody else. And that said, I'm all for what the other panelists are saying about, putting the onus on the providers to step up, and I think they need to do it. I think that that's a challenge that we have as an industry. I think we do get impatient in the fact that, it took us years to develop the models that we had in the geographies we had, and it had all of its good spots and bad spots. And then, as we've tried to go around the world and really try to deliver globally, which is the future, we're just following the same trend as the engineering companies and the manufacturing companies, and now we're globalizing services. And, it takes a while for the education systems and the rest of that to catch up.
So do you think we might be biting more than we would chew? Because, as a large outsourcing provider, if you are supposed to land a $4 billion contract, there would be a lot of internal push from the company itself as a vendor that, okay, let's back this deal, but you may not be ready for that yet. How do you balance that?
Well, one of the things that we find is absolutely critical is managing expectations, because I think it was Mindy who said, people, as you go through the process, people run highly competitive processes oftentimes. People are trying to compete with, talking about, what they can do and where they are, and there's a fine line between being aggressive and then being unrealistic. And I think that we need to continue to balance that line with experience and make sure that we should be challenging ourselves hard. That's how innovation happens. That's how we move frontiers forward. We need to push ourselves the partners on either side of the equation hard to try to get there. On the other hand, we have to be realistic that if it's in new parts of the world, that haven't been there, that we need to solve those problems like we have before, and it needs to be fact-based and So you need to have the SLAs and the metrics and the facts and drive down to the root causes. And, you know, I've always said to people, you're always going to have problems in an outsourcing deal. And the real key is how you react when there's those problems and how you fix it, and can you get it smooth over time.
Now, we did see a term coming up, which is, or like a phrase used by Jim, saying that it is their responsibility to deliver. We are just going to manage them by metrics and reporting because that's what the shareholder asked them to do. Sometime back, we coined a term known as co-sourcing, which is synonymous with outsourcing. And that, by definition, said that both parties have to extend hands towards each other to make this work versus a hands-off approach. So, Simon, can you share what have you tried to do? Whether have you had a hands-on approach work for you better?
Yeah, I mean, I think that not many customers would just waive a contract under the nose of a key vendor and ask them to dance and perform according to it. So, you know, my experience is that it's always been a very close working relationship at a joint team level, and the only realistic way to implement things that tend to be this complicated is by working in good faith from the outset. And then, you know, back to what I think Jim said, was that inevitably you're going to get problems along the way, but you certainly don't want to start off such a critical piece of work by setting opposing camps and trying to play the commercial issues before you can solve the technical or organizational or change problems. Because yeah, I think that, you know, when you mentioned the word impatience, I mean, the issue for me is that the time that it takes to actually execute a deal within IT is enormously long. And, you know, from engagement through the bid process into the transformation and the planning to go live, I mean, I don't know, I mean, Kevin will probably give better statistics, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's a sort of 18-month period between first engagement and go-live for a major service. And, of course, within a business, that does a lot to unsettle an IT organization and the people within it. So, yeah, there is a real attraction of a more kind of homogenous approach to it because, you know, I'd say one of the main benefits from that is that you could actually compact the time that it takes. And I'd certainly be interested in any way that that the industry could change its process through that lengthy period, because it does damage organizations.
Now, talking about the talent that we see as concentrated in given destinations, and when we try to get moving on other destinations because they are cheaper, then we do not find that talent, so we are forced to come back. So either we pay more for the quality, or we say, okay, we are going to follow the cents or pennies, and but we'll live with somewhat inferior quality for the times to come when, you know, and we'll wait till the talent is available in that destination country, the new destination country. But is it worth going in that direction? Simon? Oh, sorry, actually, Mindy, why don't you take this?
Well, you know, I think everyone's very aware that there's a looming global labor shortage. It's happening now. It's only going to grow ever more acute as a challenge in future years because of various demographic changes and et cetera. So recruiting talent is going to, you know, it's not going to get any easier. So, you know, hopping around the world and following the talent really isn't going to work in the long term. And I don't think most of the service providers are really seeing it that way. At Yankee Group, we talk a lot about technology and how technology can help, communications technologies can help with challenges like this. If you can get in place innovative technologies that allow communication amongst various centers, you don't really need to worry quite so much about having redundant talent in some of these locations. So, you know, hopefully that's what's going to be happening, that there will be more and more developments on that front, I think, as one solution.
So we're talking about service delivery being, you know, globalized in a way. Kevin, that's what you were saying?
Yes, and I think, you know, again, I was trying early on to get the notion of what we have to do is incubate some of these locations that we're going to move to down the road. I mean, you know, I think the ability to offshore is a core competence that all suppliers and the ability to work with them is key for all of the companies that are going to work with them. And so that ability to use the offshore labor arbitrage, I think, is a critical skill. I think you have to, though, in layers then say, hey, there's some countries that are there now and are ready or pretty close to ready, and there's some that are going to be 2 years. And I think the problem is when we go try to put 1,000 people's worth of work in a place that's 2 or 3 years or 4 years out, and we need to start smaller and grow it. And in a lot of times, and this is going to happen, you know, back to all over in business, you know, more and more the people aren't going to be ready when they come out of college or high school or wherever to do the jobs that we need them to do. So we have to take on more of that responsibility of training those people. And as Mindy points out, that's going to be a bigger and bigger challenge with the labor shortages coming up. And, you know, we're just going to have to take more ownership as individual companies and as an industry to try to get people ready.
Now, talking about the fact that we have got competitors, you know, you would, as a customer, pick up maybe multi-vendor outsourcing kind of approach so that you're not, you're kind of hedging your bets, and you have a multi-competitor, you know, way of doing outsourcing. How friendly are these competitors working among themselves? Because there might be some touch points where they have to interact with each other. Jim, you want to take this?
Yeah, I mean, this is the state of the business. I mean, this is what's out there. Everybody's doing multi-outsourcing. I don't really know anybody that's got a single source partner for the ITO and ADM space. So, you know, companies are always going to have touch points, and the service providers are pretty good about this. I think they're pretty mature. They realize that this is the way it is. Sometimes they win, sometimes they lose. And it's really, I find it interesting because the people that they compete against one day, they partner with another day to try to get another piece of the business. So, I think the industry itself, it's more collaborative than we might think. We do multiple RFPs. So we, especially in the ADM space, we will RFP work to our main service provider, but to also to other companies to, you know, to ensure that we're getting the best deal. And we are careful on the operations side to have multiple vendors playing in the operations. I think that's when it gets a little bit dangerous. But because you want to have some consistency and delivery of tools and that kind of thing. But that's, to some degree, we have a retained organization that really provides the governance and the governor responsibility. And those are resources that within the company itself, within our company. So I don't, you know, I see this pretty positive, and I think it's a good, it provides value back to the customer.
Do you think this could very well be the reason, though, because of which the homogeneity is missing? Or this could be an attribute which is contributing towards that shortcoming? That's the only shortcoming in this environment, in global outsourcing.
I mean, I think we would have a multiple-sourced environment anyway. I think it's naive to think one company can kind of deliver this stuff globally, the full spectrum of IT. It's in all of our best interest to, we have different vendors for different competency areas that we really leverage. And from a service operations standpoint, we've personally been very pleased with our outsourcer from a global delivery. So I guess I don't sign up under the premise that, you know, we need to have a multiple, call it an ITO, or an operations vendor globally because one provider can't do it. We look to that provider to partner with other companies to deliver those services, and we manage that vendor with SLAs and with, you know, strict agreements. So it's up to them to, where they're weak at, it's up to them to get the right partner in to help.
Now, Mindy, based on the research that might have been carried out under your group, do you, I mean, if you were to do an inventory of the reasons why there would be a lack of homogeneity and what are the factors that are contributing to it, what would those be?
Well, I mean, I think there's an inherent friction here between, you know, all of the competing needs, and the service provider needs to follow the market, try to look ahead, try to figure out the future, you know, how and try to plan for, you know, which work is going to grow, which services are, you know, what the service needs are going to be, which industries are going to be interested, which regions are going to be interested. I mean, you know, it's very multifaceted and complicated, and, you know, that's something Kevin can certainly speak to, trying to weigh all of that. And on top of it, you have this issue we've been discussing of the war for talent, which is just across the board and across every industry. And you know, it's a pretty tough industry to juggle.
So for the companies which are not as successful and lucky, I would say, as Jim's organization is, where he's very pleased with the whole you know, arrangement with the multiple vendors helping them, you know, meet their needs. What is going wrong and why? Kevin, can you contribute towards that?
I guess probably not without, you know, some of the other specifics. But I think one of the things we both owe each other is to always have honest expectations about what's going on, and, you know, to work on what some of the issues are and what some of the challenges are, and work those together. And all companies go through cycles of, you know, expansion, stretching their capability, and, you know, then learning how to, you know, how to deliver in new areas and new areas and new promises from where they are. On the collaboration point, I think that passed, you know, back in, you know, when DuPont selected both Accenture and CSC in 95. To do some very major work for them, and, you know, was side by side. I think, you know, everybody learned, you know, if it wasn't from before then to on, that, you know, you really have to be able to collaborate and compete with people, and you have to be smart enough. So there's another major provider who won a big contract that a lot of people thought, you know, they would fail on and was very difficult, and you know, afterwards they shortly called us and asked us for some expertise to help them along the way. And I think being self-critical and knowing where you need help and being willing to, you know, compete, team with somebody, even your competitor, for the overall benefit of the client, I think is something you got to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a, this is Jim again, I think that's a given, Kevin. You know, we've also used Accenture at Procter & Gamble for that very purpose. You guys have come in and provided, you know, exceptional expertise in a very specific area, and we worked with our service provider to, you know, bring you in and to augment their current skills. So, you know, I just don't think one vendor can provide all the, you know, all the resourcing that you need, and you really need to adopt a connect and develop kind of a strategy where you're out surveying the marketplace looking for who's really good at this. But I guess coming back to my point, I don't think it's luck working. It's really hard work working with a service provider. We leverage a tool that we call a joint business plan. It's really sitting down and getting very strategic on what are the things that we have to deliver together. It's not hands-off. You know, we just don't kind of push it off to the service provider, but it's a very strategic commitment at the top of both companies to make this work because failure is not an option.
And I couldn't, you know, I think that's very, very well said, and is exactly my experience and our experience, which is the, you know, these are hard work. And that's the other thing, which is you can't afford to have 100 of these relationships, right? I think nobody wants to have one, but you have to have, you know, enough that you can work them together and spend time and invest time in it. And I think that's absolutely critical, and it requires, you know, up and down both organizations a commitment.
I actually kind of disagree a little bit with the premise here that customers, as a rule, don't care how many vendors are involved. I mean, I think that's true to a certain extent, but some customers have had enough bad experiences with situations with multiple partners and multiple vendors, either because of various agreements they've signed or because a partner they're working with has multiple vendors, that it's an important thing for enterprises to examine before they enter into an agreement with a service provider. It's one of those things they need to probe you know, how exactly is the service provider going to do this work? Who are they going to be working with? And that sort of thing. It really should be all part of the due diligence up front.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, Simon, when you are out there and trying to get this, you know, all your global outsourcing initiatives taken care of, are there any areas that you saw were weaknesses from a vendor standpoint or from your own management standpoint which would have caused the issues or the long gestation period?
I think it's, you know, it's back to the underlying premise that, you know, homogeneous service is right for the business. And, you know, I can see a conflict of interest almost where obviously a vendor is interested in delivering as standard a service as possible into a standard as possible environment. But, you know, the business reality is very different. You know, we've got a variety of different job roles with different people with different IT competence using different systems in different places. And I just think that it's unrealistic to think that you can slap a standard service onto into that kind of environment. And I think that one of the things that takes an extraordinary amount of time is going through this sort of joint responsibility planning where you do work out the boundaries of responsibility. And, you know, it's all mixed up to the same discussion around multiple vendors. You know, you've got to make a call on how many vendor agreements you want to work with, and strategically, how do you put the stake in the ground to separate them? You know, my own case recently, we've entered into a global service contract for desktop services, but we drew the line at the wide area network that we considered we needed to control strategically within the company so that we can make sure that we can maximize the value of both agreements and not be reliant on one vendor to manage that for us. So I just think it's, you know, when you get into the detail and when you have to anchor, you know, from an IT perspective, when you have to anchor what you're doing with the business, who have all got, you know, a lot of IT experts in their own organizations, particularly a company such as Elekta, then inevitably it's going to be a difficult and time-consuming process. But I think, you know, the key would be to try and almost split it into easier-to-digest components where you could build on different kind of service elements or service towers. So, you know, you can kind of put your own meal together from a variety of different components that are relatively standard.
Now, if you were to look at the typical pitfalls that you may have in with respect to the governance that goes in there, the operational and the relationship management related issues in an outsourcing relationship, what would those be which would be preventing us from getting there? Mindy, you want to see that from an outside perspective?
What are some of the typical problems that can arise?
Yeah, because what are the typical mistakes people make because of which, in terms of governance or operational or the relationship management,
sure,
which kind of demotivates the customer and or the vendor?
Well, it's back to what we've been touching upon throughout the show, which is making sure you understand the responsibility of the enterprise, the responsibility of the service provider, understanding who does what, when, and where. Change management is a huge challenge for enterprises entering into outsourcing relationships. They often don't know what to do and how to get it right, and they often need help from service providers with it. And it's the kind of discussion that sometimes doesn't take place as you know, acutely as it should. Benchmarking before you actually enter into an agreement is an important thing to do, so you really actually understand what you're seeking here, what your goals are, how your process actually did work before, as opposed to, you know, how it's going to work after the outsourcing is going on. Really looking at your retained organization and making sure that the retained organization is well integrated into the process with the service provider as well as with your organization, looking at your culture. I mean, it's a really long list of things that that the enterprise needs to do.
Now, Kevin, would you have a list of pet peeves, would you say, which prevent you from being able to do the best job that you can as a company, as a service provider?
Well, yes, I would have a list of that. of things, and I think I'd prefer to as you know, characteristics for successful service delivery. And I think, you know, it starts with them making sure your expectations are matched. So as we talked before, if you have a standards, you know, the worst thing is if you want to buy a standard price and you want a customized service. That's where the misconception or the misconnect happens often. And so I think, you know, laying out what those expectations are and being honest with what, you know, customers truly want. And, you know, then, you know, working the service provider to get it, I think, makes, you know, an absolute difference. And the personalities of different companies are wildly different, right? Some have a hard time letting go. Some let go, you know, very easy and, you know, want to do it. But, you know, I always, you know, tell our teams that, you know, I want to make sure that we have a clean list of what we need to do and a clean list of what we expect the other company to do. Because very seldom do you just throw stuff across the wall and somebody else runs it, you know, forever. That may be different for infrastructure, which can kind of run on, but whether it's applications or business processes or so on, there's a lot of tight connections back there, and those connection points are the ones that we got to make sure are tight, and that if there's things around driving change in the business, around standardizing the service or not, that the company, you know, really works hard on holding up their end of the bargain.
Now, knowing that, you know, any customer that you're going to approach, whether current or the new one, new prospects, they would always be looking for the most value that they can derive out of each dollar that or cent that they spend. So would there be a natural temptation that you see that they have and you have to kind of go and educate them to not go in that direction? Or do you think the customer base is becoming a little more aware that they cannot just go totally squeezing the juice out of every penny that they're going to spend and try to drive the service provider against a wall?
Yeah. You know, I think it really depends, and people are all over the map. I think there are more people today than ever that understand, that have had experiences, or are smart enough to understand that, you know, you can't squeeze the last juice out. I did a review for CEO of a major company of one of my competitors' agreements, and you know, he said, "Hey, I don't think we're getting what we want. You know, I'm missing these three things." And I went and you know, spent at his request a couple weeks looking at it. Came back to him and said, "You know, sad to tell you, you got exactly what you paid for, right?" And so there's a disconnect, but what he wanted and what his team wanted. There still are cases, though, we call it procurement department gone wild, where people are deciding that, you know, it's just like buying a pencil, so I might as well just keep bidding it to get to the lowest cost possible. And, you know, all of our companies, right, we're all in competitive environments, so all of us can fall into the same trap with people we use as suppliers. But, you know, I always tell people, you know, in manufacturing, we learned that it's quality, schedule, cost. I got to get the quality right before I can get on schedule, and if I can't get on schedule, I can't deliver it at the right cross point. So, you know, you got to keep those in balance, and, you know, competition's good for everybody and keeps people sharp, but you've got to remember that there's a balance there.
Now, we've heard about a title, which is CFO for IT. How connected is this person with the actual IT priorities which are to be met? And that's a person who would work with the procurement department or would be signing on the dotted line for the check and the contract so that the actual needs are met. How is that whole, you can say, role is defined, and how well are they going back and communicating with the IT group that they are trying to support? Jim, would you have thought on that?
Oh, yeah. No, we would classify this as running IT as a business. And when you run IT as a business, you get real clear on your projects, your deliverables, the priorities, your strategies, and how your strategy is really tied to the business strategies. So there are no surprises. So, for instance, you know, if the business strategy is to grow in developing markets and they need capability there, you know, from an IT standpoint, what are we doing to drive that capability? And if we have a strategy to cut so much of our overhead cost, you know, what are the projects that are going to deliver that? So that if we have to make a cut in one of our, you know, on some of the work, the new work coming in, it's a simple exercise. because it's the data speaks for itself, and we lay it out on the table. I think having a strong a partnership with finance is absolutely critical. So if the IT organization, doesn't have that, what you'll generally find is they'll talk more in techie terms about the value of the work, but they really can't put it in terms that the business can understand.
So you would always like to have the finance guy front-ending vendor versus a tag team, or would you?
No,
how would you do
absolutely
it?
Not. And I think one of the panelists said it before. You know, you don't want either purchasing or finance or even IT working the vendor alone. I mean, this is really, you need multiple functional leadership here. So finance will help keep us all honest in terms of, what's the real value? And let's either it's real dollar savings direct to the budget, or it's kind of indirect savings showing up in the business unit's budget. But they'll produce more of the value equation. IT will help provide some of the governing in terms of what's this do from an architecture standpoint, complexity, and all those kind of things. And then purchasing will drive the best deal. And that's the three functions really need to be locked in arm when negotiating and dealing with vendors.
I think service providers would tell you that they are concerned about entering into contracts with companies who don't have strong executive business side buy-in on any of these contracts.
Yeah.
You know, that it's just a recipe for disaster.
I agree.
Absolutely.
So talking about a stable state for an outsourcing engagement where one or more service providers are engaged and everything is going well, if that is instability and then comes any kind of merger or acquisition kind of disruption, and it takes away that stable state, puts you in an ionized state, and then you go about reprioritizing everything, and by the time you're stabilizing the field, you see that activity would happen yet again. So what are the typical challenges, or I would say instead of challenges, what are the strategies that could be used so that we do not have disruption? Because frankly, customer does not care. A company which is serving its own customers and it's trying to outsource some of the services that it's trying to use, their customer don't care how and where you're getting your things done. So how do you keep that stable while you know internally it cannot be stable just because of the way business changes? Simon, you want to take this?
Yes. I just think that it's a business reality that, it must be a very fortunate business that could stay stable. The fact that M&A activity is on the radar for the majority of businesses, or change to some degree is on the radar, you're aware of that when you go into a contract and an agreement, and it's a key part of the thinking that must take place when you're starting to scope out the services and the flexibility that might be needed. And, from my perspective, it's actually one of the attractive benefits of working with a service provider that's got good global reach, because it is more scalable for only a smaller, medium-sized business than we could hope to achieve internally. I think the other thing that it could do, that it does, and again, one of the key attractions for me, is that it provides a structure, a framework, a process, and standards and governance kind of automatically. You can imagine acquisition discussions are probably a lot easier from an IT perspective if you've got good visibility of, the service that would be available once that business has been bought into the company. And, in our own industry, we've tended to be involved in acquisitions of smaller businesses rather than mergers. So, and it's a way that you can quickly mature a smaller business who hasn't got the IT systems or standards in place. So, I vote for it as a benefit. I don't see it as so much of an impediment, as long as you've got the contractual flexibility and the terms allow you to scale up, scale down on demand, and that's certainly something that I've focused on in negotiation discussions.
Now, Kevin, in your case, being a service provider, when you are in a situation where one of your key customer gets through an acquisition or gets acquired or has a 50-50 merger so that there's no specific say, in terms of who would be the end provider after that merged entity. How do you handle it, and you know, how do you go about keeping the service quality levels along, you know, the same levels, basically, when you are going through that transition?
Well, I think the key thing is, you know, our reputation is everything in the business, and you know, we want to make sure that we deliver, you know, service to the last day. That if we're not chosen as the ongoing service provider. That said, during the whole process of a merger, there's a lot of activities going on, and you know, it's high risk, high reward, right? You can either end up with the whole thing or only parts of it or nothing. But the first thing you got to do is you got to remember to deliver every day. And I remind our teams all the time, right, that, you know, what we do today, this minute, this hour, is what makes a difference on a longer term. So no sense worrying about the future and what could happen. Just stay focused on the service delivery. And I think, you know, if there is a decision that one provider or another are not going to be around, I think then you have to think about, you know, what's that mean for those people's careers, and do you want to do something with retention, or what other types of the many techniques that are available do you use to, you know, keep the people and keep them focused?
Now, suppose you are taken as a chosen one even for the merged entity, and in any case you have to take them through that disruption from a business standpoint while not reducing the quality levels. What is the type of framework or strategies that you help implement in collaboration with the customer, and do you get the required support from the customer? Because even the decision makers might be changing in the merged entity.
Yeah, and then I come back to, I'll sound like a broken record, but the expectations management, which is as critical during the time of a merger as anything else, which is, you know, you've got to make sure you get with the key executive people and say, hey, this is what our expectations were and what we were delivering to. Is that going to change or not? So that you got that baseline about how it's going to work, and use that as a framework to drive the agreement. You know, during those times, we try to be, you know, extra responsive, extra flexible to try to get focused. But we want to make sure we understand the business objectives of the merger so that we can make sure that all our activities are focused on, you know, the combination of, you know, cost reductions and other synergies that they might have to try to drive that forward. You know, and we have, you know, been through numerous of these, and have a whole set of, you know, best practices, whether it's from, you know, how to deal, make the systems decisions, to, you know, how to handle the people issues, to how to handle all the licensing and other types of agreements you have.
Jim, when you are faced with such an issue, how do you handle the portfolio of vendors that you have, the relationship, the governance side of things?
Yeah, this is a very good question. Because a lot of I think outsourcing is all about relationships. That's the foundation, and you have to be very respectful and open and honest with the various service providers, and let them know what's going on. For instance, when we acquired Gillette, Gillette had several vendors that we were not going to use as part of the, you know, going forward state. But we worked with them. We told them, you know, here's the expectations. And the vendors just did an absolutely outstanding job. You know, I was amazed at their level of professionalism all the way up through the end when we turned the switch over to our service provider. And, you know, the nice thing about that is from a customer standpoint, if they behave professionally all the way up to the end, we're now doing business with some of those people. And actually, we're doing more business with them now than they were doing before. So, you know, this is a very small industry to some regards. You know, we negotiate deals 5 to 10 years out. Service providers are very astute in terms of they realize what they may lose something today, but it may come around 3 or 5 years from now.
Now, in the research that has been conducted by a few associations, there was a trend that was seen that every year newer players, relatively smaller players, are gaining the market share over the big guns
mm-hmm.
in the outsourcing space. What is triggering that? Is that like people want to try smaller companies where they may have more leverage and or the service quality may be not as good, and since the concept of using multi-vendor outsourcing is not new, and people are comfortable, then they want to give a try to the new ones to see what's out there which is better and more competitive in terms of rates. Mindy, you want to see that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There definitely have been some studies and numbers showing that there's been an increase in, you know, a trend to a larger number of smaller contracts being signed, and those tend to be with smaller niche players. But, you know, there's some competing numbers that show that the bigger players are still going strong. So, you know, there's a little bit of disconnect, I think, in some of the market numbers that have been thrown out there. But I think there are a couple things going on here. I think, as I said, when an enterprise is starting to dip their toe in the water and looking at some kind of outsourcing, they are often reluctant to go with a large, big bang, multi-process outsourcing contracts, so they will try a smaller single function approach and sort of see how it goes and maybe build from there. I think this is the approach that a lot of the Indian providers have taken. They've had a lot of good luck at landing some of these smaller deals and then using them to leverage for bigger deals down the road.
Simon, what has been your experience with respect? I mean, would you, you know, in coming years, want to try new vendors just to see what they're all about?
My current perspective is that I'm interested in creating a more global IT environment for the business that I'm working with. So I'm not, I'm trying to move away from smaller local-based vendor agreements to deploy the standards that we think we need to drive the business forward and drive the growth. Having said that, I think that you've got to find a good fit between a business and a potential supplier. Both parties have got to be seen as interested and that it represents a good opportunity. And, for that reason, I could see that a couple of the larger players in the market would have struggled to engage fully with Elekta at the moment because it doesn't represent anything that can make the margin and provide an opportunity for them. So we had to find partners that we're both comfortable that there's some mutual benefit there. To me, that's the important thing. And from a management point of view, of course, you've got to get that balance right of how many vendors do you deal with and where do you deal with them, because the transition to a managed service is only kind of opening the door on a whole new world there where you've actually got to manage what happens from that point on. So, certainly you've got to take those practical considerations into account.
Now, we already see that the security and the privacy and intellectual property issues have been paramount for specific some few industry types like financial and healthcare or insurance who may at all be doing such outsourcing or maybe involved in such outsourcing initiatives. Now, when you go into the global IT outsourcing space where multi-country, multi-vendor environment is created, this would, I would say it'll have an accumulative effect on, the issues that we may see or we may be fearing about. So from a vendor's perspective, Kevin, what are you doing to make these people feel safer?
Can you give me a little more context when you mean safe?
I mean, like security in the sense they should see intellectual property issues or privacy issues and things of that nature where nobody would just, pick up a piece of code or some sensitive data and post it on a blog. Or a website, or through whatever other channels, then people get illegally access to data.
Yeah, and I
how would you as a company, as a service provider, when you are trying to approach a customer, mm-hmm. which may be sensitive to such leakages, and you're saying you're pitching the multi region outsourcing. How you and your competitors who have to work arm in arm with you deliver on something and still keep these people comfortable that, yes, things will not go out of hand?
Yeah, well, with the much publicized incidents all over the place today, it's kind of, you've hit on the topic du jour, right? as something that, you know, has always been a concern, but now is a heightened concern of people. And, you know, we have a very extensive program in place that, you know, kind of top to bottom addresses how we address data security, what standards we have, what rules we have for physical security, and so on. And it's a pretty complex area because, you know, some of what we've allowed and the benefits we've enjoyed from technology, you know, such as flash drives or cell phones and stuff like that, are all things we have to take away in order to get back to the security that we need, or handle in a very different way. So we have a comprehensive program that we talk to people about and talk about how we're working it and how we're and how we're developing it. You know, we, like all the other of my other people in this space, my competitors, teaming partners in this space, you know, are taking a, you know, given all the highlights, and I think probably the most disturbing thing I heard recently was an interview with a guy who said, you know, I can go, you know, work all week, you know, and make $1,000, or I can, you know, I can go on the internet, you know, in an hour and make $10,000. So as long as those motivations are there, this will continue to be a hot topic. So, you know, we're all looking at that and trying to drive it. I think the thing to not forget is the hardest stuff to detect and prevent is the stuff that's done in collusion with multiple people and multiple companies. And as these, you know, rings, so to speak, get more and more sophisticated, we're really going to have to work as, you know, teams with joined-up security procedures and ongoing monitoring to make sure that it doesn't happen.
Jim, do you have such issues where people may not be coming up to your expectations in terms of vendors providing such services and not being able to handle your security concerns and things of that nature?
No. I mean, frankly, we see the vendors are a key enabler for us because they're able to stay on top of the technology and the best practices in this space. You know, IT companies or customers like ours and others, it's a significant investment to purchase the capability to really drive this. So we do leverage our partners, and I have a pretty strong retained organization in the security space, so we have accountability as well. And we do regular audits. Every year we have a whole cycle of audits that we do on the processes and practices of our vendors to ensure that they're following our policy.
You know, I think there are two things going on here with this very important topic. There's the reality of the security challenges, and then there's the perception. And, you know, it's definitely a huge issue for a lot of customers and enterprises. In our surveys, it always pops up as one of their main concerns when they consider outsourcing, when they consider outsourcing to a particular region. You know, there are different regions of the world that have better reputations than others for, you know, for protection. And so it's something that, you know, the customers need to be, as part of the whole process of entering into an outsourcing agreement, they need to be, have their concerns assuaged, you know, and they need to be educated.
Simon, any last thoughts?
Well, I agree completely with Jim's perspective as a customer that, you know, it's one of the drivers for us considering an outsourcing agreement with a professional vendor. And when you look at the risk, the inherent risk, probably feel safer with that kind of arrangement in place than, you know, the alternatives where, you know, we know how people behave when they leave companies through various surveys. We know what happens to electronic data or intellectual property within businesses. So yeah, I see it as a step forward.
On behalf of the show and our listeners, I'd really like to thank you, Kevin, Simon, Mindy, and Jim, for sharing your thoughts and insights about the challenges and pitfalls that prevent organizations from experiencing a homogeneous IT outsourcing delivery, and also for sharing the corresponding strategies to reach a state of nirvana, if that's possible, in global IT outsourcing.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Okay. Thank you again. Now, as discussed, customer does not and should not care about where the services are being delivered from, and it needs to be a seamless experience. selecting one or more global outsourcing vendors with complementary offering and a strong presence in those outsourcing destinations may be a very good idea. Vendor selection and relationship management is based on cost savings alone, and running after the next cheapest outsourcing destination may be being myopic, since that could lead to bigger problems and losses due to opportunity and, say, goodwill losses as quality may suffer. We are not there yet when it comes to homogeneous IT outsourcing delivery. However, there is awareness, and the customers as well as vendors are on the job to make this a reality. How soon will we get there? Time will tell. Thank you again for listening to CIO Talk Radio. This is Sanjog Gall, your talk show host. Till next week, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Join Sanjog Gall next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, for another hour of CIO Talk Radio.